Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 239. I am here with my usual cohort. It's the internet, Peter Willington.
Hey.
Real life's John Jordan.
Hello.
And Fantasyland's Keith Andrew.
Who's fantasy am I?
Everyone's Keith. Everyone.
I usually charge extra for that. So.
We can all dream. That's what fantasies are all about, isn't it?
Well, yeah, also being the backdrop for hit arcade video game Fantasy Zone.
Is that a hit video game?
It was a hit video game. I think it was, anyway. Sega seemed to think it was at the time.
Was that why there were numerous sequels?
Yeah, there was. But there was, though, mate. There actually was. There was Fantasy Zone 2, I think. It's like I think it's like Space Harrier, or it might be like Gradius. I don't really remember.
Well, it's a bit of a fuzzy end to the week this week, frankly, because I'm a bit hazy anyway, because I've got one mind on doing actual work that revolves around this week's efforts and news, and the other half of my mind is preparing for next week, because a lot of us, some of us anyway, are running off to do Gamescom and GDC.
Who's going?
All of us. No, you're not going, are you, Peter?
I'm not going.
John, are you
going? I'm not going, mate.
Okay, so it's me and Keith, then.
Well, okay, so the cool kids are staying behind.
See that silence? That is the sound of the internet disagreeing with you, Peter Willington. And you were supposed to represent the internet as well. Mm-hmm. We're going to look at all new exciting games that haven't come out yet.
I'm not. I'm just going for a bit of sausage, to be honest. There's
plenty of schnitzel.
Schnitzel,
yeah. Schnitzel
in Cologne, because that's where it's going down, in that European place, which I've never been, which is nice. I've been doing my Pocket Gamer tour of the Europe, and I haven't been to Germany yet, so this will be a first.
I hear it smells quite nice, the actual sort of landscape.
The landscape smells nice.
Yeah, it's like got a really nice aroma to it.
Where is it going?
Schnitzel-y aroma?
Oh, John gets it. You see, we're cool, John. Right,
Cologne.
Ow!
Guys, this is the worst start to the podcast we've had in literally weeks. Cologne.
It's all all right.
Got it now.
Right. Okay.
We're all with you. Very good. Okay. Stuff. Of course, there have been a few things happening this week we can talk about. One of them being the iPhone 5C. We've seen video of what is purported to be the chassis for it. We're going to describe it for you in a bit. There's also some stuff about Disney Infinity coming to 3DS and iOS companion app stuff as well. And also Plants vs. Zombies 2, Pirate Legends DC, and a whole range of other things. But first, the update. It's been at least a week since a Pixel People update, which means that developers Lamdamu have clearly been letting themselves down. So they've jumped in with yet another update to Pixel People. This is the game that never stops having new content being brought to it. 30 new jobs, 30 new achievements, 20 new mutants, and 12 new buildings. I haven't seen any figures on this, but the amount of updates that seem to come out for it, and the way it kind of suckered people in at the beginning... Suckered sounds bad, but I mean the way it sucked people in at the beginning.
That's much better.
Well, because people seem to get hooked on it and they weren't sure why. That was a lot of the feedback when it first got released. They were like, yeah, I'm still playing it. Not sure why. Think it's fun, but I keep tapping. So there must be something to it. So there's a whole bunch of new stuff there for you guys if you're still playing. Crack on with that. Minecraft Pocket Players, there's a few new additions to that game, both aesthetic and in terms of content. You have now got the sun, the moon, and the stars.
Oh.
I know, isn't it lovely? It sounds like some kind of crappy poetry reading. But no, you actually, if you look up in the sky now, if you've updated it, you can see the sun, the moon, and the stars. So there you go, it looks a bit more realistic. I presume the moon is square or blocky or something, because that's what they all look like, isn't it? But there are a couple of things you can actually use as well. There's the introduction of double chests, which means there's chests which you can now store more than one item in, which will be useful for hoarders. And you can also get quartz slabs now, which you mash together with the stone cutter to make a quartz block, which lets you sort of stock up your nether quartz supply for that nether block thingy. So I'm told. I don't really play it that much.
Do any of us play Minecraft? Like, this always comes up. The updates always come up.
Yeah.
And like, we're all sort of like, oh, that sounds like it's a thing. I know it's phenomenally popular with genuinely, this is meant to be phenomenally popular, especially amongst
you don't quite believe it.
So, well, it's very popular, supposedly, amongst young children is what I was kind of going to move
young
on to.
Young people, I think.
Sorry, young people. You know, the kids, But I don't know adults that are playing it on mobile. I don't
know. On mobile. I know plenty who are into it on either Xbox or PC or whatever, but not so much the mobile. A little extra thing, Hunters, which is the game that was... It's a top-down strategy type game. You're moving from tile to tile, shooting the crap out of everything in your way. It's from the same guys who did the Warhammer Quest app.
It was the first one, wasn't it? Hunters, was it? They were a UK company. They're out of...
Rodeo Games.
Rodeo. Someone used to work, they were out of Guildford. Yeah, it was really good. I remember when it came out.
Yeah, and the Warhammer one was good too. But Hunters 1, it gives you a good idea, because if you've played either the Warhammer Quest game that was released, you'll see similarities between the two. They are very much these grid-based combat games, top-down. They're both really good. So you can get it for free right now. It went free today, and it will be available for nothing for a while. Don't know how long, but I'd suggest grabbing it now if you want a chance to get it for nowt. It's approaching that time of year when Apple start shoveling out their new model iPhone. We had the iPhone 5 last year, which was probably the biggest update to the iPhone we'd seen in a while, because it changed the screen aspect. It went for kind of a 16:9 ratio. It was a lot taller, a lot thinner, and looked kind of... It was the most drastic change, both in terms of the aesthetic, the look of it, I suppose, and the form function, because everyone had to update their apps so that there weren't black bars down either sides of the screen. So this year, what we're expecting, apparently, according to all the rumors, of which there are always millions, is that we're going to have an iPhone 5S, similar to the iPhone 4S that came out, you know, the stopgap a couple of years ago. However, people haven't really been focusing so much on the 5S as much as they have the rumors about another model that may be launching alongside. The rumors have said that it's going to be a budget iPhone, which is at the moment being referred to as the 5C. There's been a few shots floating around the internet of chassis, these little plastic casings that's supposed to be the body of the phone, in various different colors. We've seen some white ones, and also there's been a yellow one, most recently in a video that's been leaked of some person who's got them all the different model iPhones lined out and the chassis for what is purported to be the 5C. It looks very much similar in size to the iPhone 5. It's a little bit longer, like a tiny bit longer and a tiny bit wider, because it seems that the casing surrounding it is a little bit thicker. But aside from that, the form factor looks pretty much the same. So it looks like it's going to have the same size screen as the 5 and 5S, which would make sense because they've had to, you know, change all the way that they format their games. So going back would be a huge pain in the ass. But obviously the major difference is it's not a glass and steel affair. It is a plastic chassis, a shiny one too. It's a gloss surface if you look at the video and seen it. There's a few of them floating around. We've actually put a big article about what we want from it up on our site, and it's got a few pictures as well, so you can see what it looks like for yourself. Of course, the big question is this the right thing for Apple to be doing?
I think it's clearly the case this is happening because they're just under so much pressure now from Android. I mean, it's just, I was kind of thinking, me being probably the only person in the world who still uses a BlackBerry phone and it's just all a Lumina 920. but if you could give anyone a recommendation, you'd just say get an Android phone. I mean, it's got by far and away, you know, the most amount of apps on it. It's by far and away you can get, you know, the best kind of physical variety of cheapness and expensiveness. And obviously size is completely different. So, I mean, I'm just kind of surprised because Apple's approach seemed to be, they'd always have their top end one. Then if you want to get a cheaper one, you could get like the you know, slightly older, say a two rev older version.
Yeah.
They could keep manufacturing. And that seemed to be a kind of a fairly, you know, I think that kind of keeps everything in a kind of logical place. But I think when you start having a hierarchy of this is our top end phone, this is our kind of more lower end phone, and they kind of look the same, it seems it's a logical thing to do to make money, but it's a logic that they've only, that because of their previous philosophy on how they would run their product line for iPhones, it's a decision made out of weakness.
It seems to fly in the face of what they have always said before. Like the same thing with releasing the iPad mini. Steve Jobs is always like, this is the iPad size, it's supposed to be this size, and this is how it will stay. There will be no mini.
And I think, you know, but with Jobs not there, I mean, that's obviously a strength and a weakness, because Jobs, he had this complete control and no one would stand up to him because he was, you know, he was literally the boss. You know, so he no one else would make those kind of statements, and two, he could make those statements, and even if he was completely wrong, at that time he was running the most successful, profitable company in the world, so no one was going to tell him what to do. What he should have said was, we've done lots of testing on these kind of new tablet forms, and we think this is the best one, so we're going to go with this. But when anyone says, we're never going to do this, then obviously you're a hostage to fortune, aren't you, because he's not in charge of the world.
It is the second time they've done something like this after the Mini, which I always said, despite being the one I was most interested in, and I'd still rather get me, I think, than a full-size one, was a sign that they were following rather than leading, because other people had obviously done that size tablet before, and this again is kind of the same as that. But that said, I can see, this is going to sound really sexist, but I can see a lot of girls buying this.
Is it a hairdresser's phone?
I can see people hold it. I think the yellow example we've got looks horrible.
It's kind of a pastel yellow, isn't it?
That's always little yellow sports cars. They always say they're hairdressers cars.
Hospital yellow. This looks.
I have ordered a yellow Lumina 920. So I'm,
yeah, but hairdresser. That's wrong. The Lumia yellow is Lumina, a lot. What?
It's quite fluorescent. There is.
You add an N in where there isn't an N. I do.
It's true.
The yellow is much nicer and luckier than this. I can see it doing well. I mean, it's all just, it depends, you know, to the average guy, I don't think it's making much difference. It just depends what you want Apple to be. And I think all of these things are signs of them almost becoming more Microsoft of oldie, of kind of trying to occupy all the ground. And by doing that, you do take the sheen off certain things you do. You know, like Mercedes releasing a budget car or something. Mm. People would go, well, what are they doing? Mm. I think also, they're at that stage now, and you know what, we're in 6 years since the first iPhone, where that's kind of inevitable.
Keith's right. Now you're getting to the stage now where hardware doesn't really matter so much. So the software is going to be roughly the same. You're going to be able to run the same apps on both of them. I mean, it might be a speed issue for games, but no one really cares at this stage because everything's so powerful. So I think stuff like, and obviously, you know, Samsung has proven that people wanted bigger devices, and that's people may or may not like color, but it's just now really funny where you see people with iPhones, they look like small phones.
I mean, they do look like little toy phones.
That's the biggest thing now. I think people just want, oh, I want a big phone, and it's almost impossible now to buy an Android phone that's as small as an iPhone.
I think the way that they handle this moving forward will be like absolutely fascinating. And Keith, like, I really like this idea that you brought up about, like, you know, like a Mercedes making a budget model, because Mercedes actually do have a budget model, and they're called Smart, and they don't associate the Smart cars with the Mercedes brand at all. It feels like Apple is this, you know, it is this sort of shining beacon of expensive, but you pay for what you get, you know, you get what you pay for and all this sort of stuff. It almost feels like they could have gone a better route with this. They could have, if they wanted to explore the sort of slightly less expensive market, they could have branched off a part of their business and created a new line of phones entirely that took the ethos and worked within the Apple platform, but were something else.
That's one of the advantages that if you're working on Android, you have, because Samsung have a Galaxy range, you know, and there are cheaper Samsung phones. There's nothing to stop them launching another range that isn't Galaxy, that's still Android but cheaper. In the same way, you know, as you've got to say, car manufacturer, I think to Alfa Romeo own Fiat, and you know, you've got Audi, BMW, and well, you know what I mean.
Volkswagen owns everything. I always thought
one of them is their premium brand, and one of them's their you know, normal family brand.
Yeah. I mean, you have the problem, don't you, and stuff like that.
If you did this with Apple, because everything is tied together, because not only Apple and iOS one, you'd have the confusion of another, you know, maybe you could do Apple, you could literally still call it Apple Lite or something like that. I know, but if you literally took Apple name out of it and made something else completely, but it still ran iOS, then I think you'd be confusing consumers. But I think it does rub the shine off, because you're becoming so mass market in trying to appeal to people who don't have money at the same time as people who do, that you then cheapen the brand for everyone. The people, iPhone is incredibly popular and it still sells more each quarter, but I don't think it has the same, oh, I've got an iPhone buzz that
Do we think there's anyone or a significant number of people in the Western world who want an iPhone and can't get one because of the price at the moment? I mean,
absolutely.
Really, you think?
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Like, there's plenty of, and obviously this is anecdotal, but there's plenty of like friends of mine who are like, 35 quid a month for a contract for 24 months. That is actually, like, if you think about not to pull back the curtain too much, but if you think about the people who are in our business, for example, do you think about some of the like freelancers that we work with, for example? I know that like plenty of people in the business who sort of just about kind of scrape by every month, and you know, they're not poor because they're living in the Western world, but the thought of them paying 35 quid a month tied in for a 2-year contract, which
they're not gonna get an iPhone C for, it's not gonna be like £10 a month. It's still be on a contract, though. It's still be like 20 quid.
Yeah, but there's a huge difference between 35 quid a month, which is, you know, a brand new, you know, a brand new home console game, or you know, a week's shopping, and then 20 quid a month, where it's like, well, you know, that might be, you know,
I think if this is what it looks like and this is how it's pitched and it's got different color backs, I think it's a subtle change. I think this is why I said girls. I think a lot of boys buy iPhones because they're tech obsessed and they want shiny, black, shiny things. And I think there are a lot of girls who have iPhones, obviously, but I think some girls don't buy the iPhone. It is because it almost seems too, not geeky, but hardcore. It seems like a serious thing you buy, and I think literally kind of shifting it in this way. I mean, we don't know what this is. Maybe it has a lower resolution screen. We don't know. You know, it isn't the same. You know, maybe the insides are going to make it a lot cheaper. But even if it's the same, if it's slightly cheaper and it looks slightly different, it changes the appeal of it. In the same way they've tried to do with the iPod, into trying to make it, you know, this kind of makes it a bit more, oh, it's just in my pocket. It's not the be-all and end-all. It's just a fun thing I have. You know, whereas I think people get out their black iPhones, their white iPhones, and it's their life. And, you know, I think that's sometimes less appealing to girls than it is to boys. So
I can also see it appealing more to kids, or at least to parents wanting their kids going, I want an iPhone. And they go, okay, then. And they get them the budget model. And the kids go, oh. Or they maybe go, woo, because it's in bright colors or something like that. But it does depend on how they choose to price it. I mean, at the moment, you've got the iPod Touch, which is like 200 quid. And then you've got like the cheapest model iPhone sort of. You can get an iPhone 4 at the moment, the 8 gig one, for like 320. That's like the cheap entry level thing you can get before you get up to the iPhone 5, 600, 700 territory. So if they pitch it somewhere between there, it's like 250 or something, would that be enough of a step down price-wise to justify the fact that you're probably going to get a slightly gimped phone? Well, chances are you're probably going to get an iPhone 5, aren't you, in a plastic case.
You're just doing a good sales job.
No, that's probably what it will be. That's what they do with the, you know, instead of, they'll put the last year's tech inside the plastic chassis, and that'll be the 5C, possibly.
But I don't really understand, if they're doing that anyway, then why don't they? Because obviously with these manufacturing lines, I don't know. I mean, like the manufacturing lines, if they're just going to rev it, if they're going to rev it at the same speed as they do the iPhone, which I guess they're probably not going to do, then I don't see why they just don't continue making the things they've been making tens of millions of. If you're coming up with a whole new design, then I think they must think they're going to do massive volumes and they're going to run that design for like 2 years. Because I think you're right. When it comes out, it'll be a discount to the high end one, but I don't think it'll be significant enough for people who whatever reason can't buy an iPhone to suddenly go and buy this one. In a year's time, if you know, they may be able to drop the price more. But
I have run it past a couple of like people, like sort of my partner and a few friends and things, people who actually want iPhones, and I've been like, look, there's probably going to be this cheaper model, and I've shown it to them. They're like, yeah, but it's not a proper iPhone, is it?
Really?
Yeah, really, really. That's the reaction.
That's really bad. I mean, that's like Keith saying, it's like they spent all this time building up this massive, we're a premium brand, then they give you the knockoff one. Everyone goes, well, you spent all this time saying we're a premium brand, we don't want the knockoff one.
Exactly. Because people will look at it and go, oh, it's one of those iPhones.
Whereas if you said, oh, here's an iPhone 4S, and people are probably they know it's not the most up to date one, but they go, oh, yeah, it's cool.
That's the gamble, isn't it? Are you making something that, I mean, that I'm sure there'll be a huge bunch of people who don't care, but I've talked to a bunch of people and said, hey, look at this, and they've gone, yeah, and then. Because I think even though it's perhaps diminished slightly, like Keith said, there is still a certain amount of cachet to whipping out your iPhone. And if you whip it out and it's clearly the plastic one, people are going to be like, oh.
I don't know. I'm not sure that elitism kind of exists anymore. I mean, it's still there with some, but I don't think, you know, if someone gets out an iPhone 4, I don't think everyone goes, oh, what is that? Oh, how have you still got that?
Still look kind of glassy and shiny, and they're not plastic.
I mean, this is almost Nokia's strategy in that you lead with a couple of expensive phones, which then kind of act as the brand. And even if you get one of the cheaper ones, you know, and they do go a lot cheaper, People don't go, oh, why have you, you know, they just see it as the same phone, essentially. Yeah, you can get a better one. Yeah, you can get a cheaper one. But, I mean, Nokia's doing a different thing. Nokia's never been the elite, you know, phone. They've always been...
Used to be back in the
yeah,
day.
Yeah, used to be.
No, they didn't. No, they were always...
Oh, with the N95.
That was one of their high-end phones, but they still did the cheaper ones.
Sorry.
They've never been, we are only the top end.
No, they've done the whole range. I mean, Nokia, that was Nokia.
And this is what they're doing now, and this is almost like a little subsection of that, of being able to say, I mean, you know, on this shot, it just says iPhone. It doesn't say iPhone 5C. This is kind of the way they're going now, in that you're buying into the iPhone brand, and yeah, there is a more expensive one, but it's still iPhone. I don't think people are quite that. Phones are becoming, in general, more and more every day anyway.
Well, we'll sort of find out. I mean, we're anticipating September the 10th is going to be the announcement of the what we suspect will be the 5S. So we'll have to wait and see whether they also announce the 5C at the same time.
My contract with O2 runs out on September the 9th.
Ooh, that's the universe telling you something, isn't it, Peter?
Maybe I should get one of these 5Cs.
You can get 5C and my friends will scorn you, because apparently they're horrible.
apparently they won't be out. The phones won't be available for 2 weeks after the.
I can do that phone for 2 weeks.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Can you do that?
Hey, how can I?
That phone for 2 weeks.
I could just not have. Not many people. Many people call me. And B. I could just like keep it off contract and use. I could do pay as you go. Yeah. Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Could you?
Amazing.
You won't be able to stop doing Vine. I've seen all your Vine videos. You'd be lost.
Yeah, well,
you're going to get ridiculous bills.
But I'm at home anyway. The ironic thing about all of this is that really, I think most people just use mobile phone contracts like the Littlewoods catalogue used to do. Like, essentially just paying, you're just paying for a very expensive phone on the Never Never. And because, like, I'm sat at home using my Wi-Fi and maybe I use 50 minutes a month. But, like, yeah, it's just, you know, sat on the couch reading Twitter and posting dumb vines. That's all I do.
Via your Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
The other thing that's got a bit of press was Disney Infinity, which has been getting a bit of press for a while now because everyone's anticipating the launch, which is coming relatively soon. If you haven't heard about Disney Infinity, it's basically Disney's big old sandbox world-building any type of game you want to make game. Which is going to be across all the platforms and all the handhelds and everything, pretty much. The only thing that got snubbed was Vita, I seem to remember. I don't know if they've actually added it now, but when they did the announcement, it was literally like every platform under the sun, including your microwave and your digital watch, no Vita.
Poor Vita.
Yeah, exactly. And then we've got some videos of Disney demoing the world building stuff. So you've got like a big 3-minute trailer or something of someone running around and controlling Mr. Incredible and building worlds. You can build platformers and races. It's kind of like Little Big Planet in that regard. You can use it as a world constructing game building game. But it's got all the Disney and Pixar characters in it. So it's going to be coming to 3DS. Don't know how. Because I haven't seen any 3DS videos yet. It's all been kind of the Wii and bit of PlayStation and stuff like that. Haven't seen anything for the 3DS, but we're assuming it's going to be similar to, perhaps not quite as comprehensive, but similar to the console versions. There are a couple of apps coming to iOS, however, and Google Play, I think it should be as well. One of them being the first Disney Infinity Toy Box, which will allow you to basically create and edit your own worlds in the Toy Box mode. Toy Box mode is what they call the world-building bit. So using your iPhone app, you'll be able to build the worlds. Now, I'm assuming, or at least hoping, that this all links into an account, and then you can play those worlds on your console or on your game. I'm assuming it all links together.
Surely it must be.
Which would be quite cool. I like the idea of building a world on your lunch break or something, and then going back home and playing it. That's quite neat if it's all tied together. That'll be free, apparently, and it'll be coming to the iPad in the next couple of weeks. The other thing, which is making use of the augmented reality functions, is called Disney Infinity Action. And it's basically an excuse for you to video yourself standing next to a character from Pixar. So you're going to sit on your sofa, and then by the magic of augmented reality, Sully from Monsters, Inc. is going to drop down off the sofa and go, "Rawr."
Like,
that's what he does, isn't it? And then you're going to go, oh, I'm pretending to be frightened, and run off screen, stage left. and then you'll, I don't know, Vine it or something, and everyone will find it hilarious.
This is what people spend their life doing these days, isn't it?
Like apparently. This. That's what the trailer looks like. It's clearly going to be just a little throwaway, isn't it funny, app. But
considering how augmented reality has been such a massive success so far.
Well, yes, it's been huge. That's why the Vita is so successful, because of all those AR games.
Hey, I'm going to talk about a Vita AR game later on.
Oh, really?
It's very good, thank you.
I'm sure it is, but that's no use if no one's playing it, is it?
This is true, but I mean, so this is basically a social media marketing tool. They're going to give this away for free, and you'll go, hey, look at this cool video, hashtag Disney Infinity. And that'll be Disney basically making their play for you to do their marketing for them. But here's my question. Which Disney character would you want to sit down with in real life?
See, we were quite entertained by that. I could see John going, ugh.
Well, what kind of, I don't know, what kind of answer do you want? You want,
I want the truth, John.
A serious one, please.
So what do you mean by sit down with? What, have a cup of tea with? What?
Like if you wanted to interact with like a in augmented reality, which one would it be?
Was Jessica Rabbit, was she... wasn't Who Framed Red? No, that was something else.
It was a mixture because it used Disney characters and Warner Brothers characters.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. I can't remember which studio was responsible.
She wasn't either. She was invented for Roger Rabbit, so she doesn't count.
Okay, well, Keith.
I just have a lovely cup of tea with Mary Poppins.
Oh,
that doesn't count. We clean the room together by snapping our fingers. And...
She's a real person. She's not. You're gonna get augmented reality Mary Poppins.
Well, I can't say I want to have a cup of tea with Julie Andrews because that's just a bit weird. I'd rather have it with Mary Poppins as she was.
Yeah.
Apparently, Julie Andrews was filth.
Medicine.
I'm ready now, I think.
You'll get sued.
No way. I said apparently. I prefixed it with apparently. FYI, I'm fine. But apparently she was, like, swore like a sailor. Well, I can't remember who she was married to, but no, all reports were that she, had a...
Not filth.
Yeah, she bloody, she was. Don't buy that Mary Poppins nonsense. God. That's why she was, you know, if you can play that sweet, then it means you know how to be filth.
She flew with an umbrella and she took on the Nazis. She wasn't filth.
She was a treasure.
Hills are alive with the sound of coarse language.
She's still alive, you know. She's not dead.
she was. Okay. Oh, I like Wally. I'd have a sit down with Wally because he'd probably, like, if I were to happen to pass out or fall into a coma or something like that, then I know he'd, like, look after me. Because that's what he does in the little film, doesn't it? When he gets knocked out or locks down, and he looks after and puts an umbrella over her head and does all that kind of stuff. So I know. Good luck, crisis.
I do like the dog in Up as well. He's quite cool.
Chatty dog.
Yeah.
When it went all doggy at the end, I thought it lost it a bit. The beginning of that film is fantastic. But I think it peters out.
That's the worst bit, because it's all sad.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Oh, it's so sad. Yeah, I know.
It's phenomenal. It's like, what a gut punch at the beginning. But then when it gets into talking dogs and old man towards the end, it's...
No, he's good. The talking dog's good.
Yeah, that's the good bit. That's the happy, smiley bit.
It's a literal dog. He says literally what he... And that's what dogs are like. They're stupid.
Oh, stupid. Talking to a cat person, so I agree. Anyway, Disney Infinity Action is going to be out on the App Store and Windows Store tomorrow. So it's out now, basically, is what I'm saying. And the Toy Box app will be in the coming weeks. I assume they'll release it around about the same time as the actual console games themselves, which would make
You assume.
I do.
I think you should do your job properly, James, and be sure.
Well, the research says coming weeks. So that's what I'm assuming based on
journalistic research. If you've not got someone hidden that you can...
Well, I know, I knew about this Disney Infinity thing like 3 months before
it was out there, but
I wasn't allowed to say it because Disney gagged us.
That's the headline.
Yeah. After Julie Andrews, it's just degrading.
Disney gagged me.
Yeah, well, it's true. So, no, coming weeks is all you're getting. So, it'll come out roughly the same time as the rest of it because there's no point having a world-building app unless you can play.
But you're the expert then, James. Do you have... I mean, this whole Infinity thing kind of confuses me because they've added so many bits to it and then bits on the bits. I just think there's just no way it can all work. A bit of it might work really well. I mean, obviously they spent a lot of money and they've got lots of very smart people there. But to me, it just seems like one of these incredibly...
It's incredibly ambitious.
It's just like, why would you try and do all those things together, because it just like means you're just never gonna, it's never gonna work. It's just like, because even if it does work perfectly, the consumer will just go, what, like, what can I do in this? Oh, I can do everything. Well, what do I do?
That,
I
mean, can be daunting, but then Minecraft is like that, isn't it? Where you jump in there and go, what can I do? What am I supposed to do?
The whole point about Minecraft is it's a blank kind of canvas that you do what you like with it. And it's like, this is like, you know, we have attachment to all these Disney characters, and it's like, seems, you know, just suddenly it seems really wrong that suddenly all these characters can be brought together, because they're all being separate films. To me, it just seems overwhelming. I mean, maybe I'm...
Well, it looks like it's a kind of springboard for each individual character's thing. If you've got a favourite character, then you buy that pack, and then you scan him in, and then that comes with a world, and that comes with a game, if you like, a game within a game that goes with it. So if you're an Incredibles guy, you can get it, and you can get the Incredibles game and play that and not touch the rest of it. Or you can build extra stuff as well, or if you like all the other characters, which I imagine a lot of kids have numerous Pixar films that they're into, they can play the Wall-E game, and then they can play the Jack Sparrow game, and they can, you know, go off and do their own things. Each character is supposed to come with level packs, so it's just like the actual game itself, the one that you go out and buy, is just kind of a springboard that you then bolt on all the attachments to and play the bits you want. So and by doing that, I imagine they can just keep upgrading and adding bits more and more and more, and just forever, really, for as many characters as they've got. So everyone, but the point is, everyone will need to grab that initial game in the first place, which is probably why it will make a gajillion dollars.
I would suspect it won't make a good jillion dollars. I imagine it'll make a good minus amount of millions of dollars.
Oh, really? You think it's going to flop?
I really can't see it. It's one of those things where, I mean, from what I can see, the guys who actually are good at Disney Mobile aren't involved in it at all, because they're doing Where's My Water and all that kind of stuff, and doing a really good job on that.
Mm.
So they just got a whole bunch of random console guys that they don't know what to do with, making this massive, massive thing. It seems like, you know, like a, I don't know. I don't know.
So they've got the C team. Well, the way I see it, they only have to have one or two bits of it that work. Like, they only, because if your kids are talking and your kids are into this sort of thing, you've only got to get, if the Incredibles game is really good, or, you know, Monsters University has just come out, if the Monsters Inc. game is really good, then that will sell it. Like, people will buy it. It doesn't matter if the rest of it's crap. And then if later down the line they release a Star Wars bit, then everyone will go, oh, Star Wars, I'll grab it for that.
Ultimately, it's kind of like them developing their own sort of middleware. Like, they can just... So I suppose it is a huge layout up front, but if they've designed it with next gen in mind... and like mobiles moving forward, and you know, the decent handheld platforms that are doing really well.
Okay, so I'm just on the power of the internet. Sorry, I've just, it's been developed not even by Disney, but it's by Avalanche in, I think, in Sweden. So it's cost $100 million.
Whoa, yeah, that doesn't surprise me though. Obviously they have the licenses for it all, but
they're all right on there. What have they done?
No, Avalanche are good. Yeah, they did. Oh no, it's a different Avalanche. It's different ones. It's Avalanche Software. Oh, they are a part of Disney. Sorry.
I seem to remember that it's made up of Avalanche. Sort of absorbed a lot of Disney's other studios when they started shuttering them. I believe there's a couple of people from the racing teams that did. You know, when they did those like two or three games where you were like, oh, Disney are pretty good at making. They didn't do very well, and then. They shut them all down.
Black Rock and all that.
Black Rock.
They're in the UK. They're not in Utah.
I think they absorbed a lot of the good talent that was sort of like, we haven't got jobs and maybe homes now.
So. I didn't like that racing game. I bought it. I didn't like it.
Well, I know a lot of kids who I've got nieces and nephews and things, and they are into the idea. And I know far too many adults who were really excited about this as well.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, seriously.
You just go around asking people, you say, well, do you like this new iPhone? What do you think of Disney Infinity? They're like, James, go away. I know.
Wandering around my clipboard taking a constant survey. Well, I'm doing my job, doing my research, aren't I?
I need analytics.
Out and about this week, we have a release that we've been waiting for a while. It's been out in Australia and New Zealand for about a month or something now, quite a while, and it's here. It's Plants vs. Zombies 2. It was 2009, wasn't it, the original?
It's a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a while. But the sequel is out. It's been the subject of some controversy because it has gone from premium to freemium, so you download it for free, and then it asks you to buy little things within the game. And as it's
free?
Such a... Yes, free to play. And that's such a beloved franchise. There are a lot of people who got a bit hostile about that.
What? That gamers, that's never happened. Getting annoyed about freemium game. Oh,
I know. It would
what a rare occurrence.
Well, it's out now, and we can all judge for ourselves. I've been playing it all afternoon, and so I will judge a little bit later on. I'll talk about it. Another thing, sticking with the whole tower defense angle, is Pirate Legends TD, which is another tower defense game, but based on the seas. Even though they look more like rivers when you see the game screens themselves. It is a very, very good-looking tower defense game, which is set in a piratey-type environment. So you're defending a ship against waves and waves of hostile, floaty enemies. You stick up towers and blast the crap out of things. Usual tower defense stuff. The big thing that made it stand out were the visuals were incredibly tight from the preview stuff. Got a bronze award from us, with Harry saying fun and challenging, lots of content, doesn't add too much new to the genre though, but respectable tower defense fun. It costs £2.49 or $3.99. Quickly, Baldur's Gate, which got taken off of the App Store for what they called contractual reasons, I think it was, contractual obligations. So there was some issue with the license or something like that, and it got pulled down. It's now back, which would be great news if we didn't give it kind of a crappy review. We said it wasn't that great in the first place.
Maybe is it better now? Have they improved?
From what I hear, it's just the same app is back up again. Okay. But the other thing is, I know they were developing the sequel, and that kind of got put on hold. And they were also thinking of bringing it over to Android. And now it's back. It seems that both of those are now back on the table. So you may get the sequel coming out, and Android lovers might get Baldur's Gate on their Android tablets and phones. So that's a positive for them. So you can grab that now. Another thing that's based on something that's gone before, Cognition Episode 2, which I believe is one of those sort of point-and-click adventures in which you play some kind of sleuth or FBI agent type wandering around. Apparently you're doing pointing, clicking, puzzle solving to try and get Erica's friend out alive before the time runs out. You can get it for £2.49 or $3.99. We actually liked the first episode, thought it was all handsome and quite innovative and pretty cool. So if the second episode's anywhere near as good as that, then you should be laughing. Is anything else out on iOS that's interesting?
There's one called Champs Battlegrounds, which is a kind of interesting mixture of kind of turn-based strategy, but it's actually real-time, kind of real-time strategy, squad-based kind of stuff. So it's from a company called, they're called Quark Games. They had a game out called Valor, which is one of these kind of very high-end kind of strategy kind of games. It's kind of niche, but very, very, very hardcore, not high-end. So if you're kind of into that kind of strategy type stuff.
There's also Solar Flux from Firebrand. Oh, yeah, nice.
Is that out now? I was looking at that video.
It should be. I was talking to the guy in Dundee about it, actually, when I went up there. And, like, I got to play it, and it is, like, properly entertaining.
Is it?
Yeah, very, very satisfying physics puzzler set in space where you have to reignite dying stars.
Also, talking about the Vita for a moment, we talked about Dragon's Crown a couple of weeks back, or last week, which is the side-scrolling Golden Axe-style fighter that has been reviewed through the roof. It's ridiculously well-regarded. It's the one with the mad art style, which has people with teeny tiny heads and huge, massive chests, and they all look ridiculous, but apparently plays extremely well. It was released in the US a couple of weeks back, but we weren't sure about when it was coming to Europe and the UK. We have got a confirmed release date. It's going to come to PSN on October the 11th, if you're in Europe. So you can grab that for Vita, and I assume you can. Can you play it on PS3 then?
No, it's not cross-platform.
It's purely just Vita.
Yeah, it's one of the few games that doesn't support it.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough. Well, that is, that'll be out October 11th, and it's apparently really, really good, even if it does look a bit weird in places. Come sit upon my throne of games. Here we are again, back in the chamber. Wherein lies the throne of games? Someone's left the door open. It's a bit drafty. Someone close that. Pete, can you close that?
Yeah, hold on.
Nice one.
Okay. Yep.
Very good. It's a very small door, apparently. sounds a bit like a stapler to me.
It's the tiniest door in the world.
I know. It sounds like a stapler hitting a table. But, you know, trust us, it's a door. So here is where we come to talk about the games that we've been playing. So the first person to take a seat upon the throne of games this week will be John. John Jordan.
Hello.
Hello there.
So I've not been podcasting for a while, so I'm
bit behind you guys, I suppose. But the one game I have been playing, which everyone's been laughing at me because I've been playing, but I've been playing it and enjoying it a lot, is The Drowning, which kind of stop your crazy laughter. And it is really odd. So, I mean, obviously, I kind of look at things from a more business point of view. So, to some degree, I'm looking at kind of monetization techniques and things. But I have to say, I'm really very confused about the everyone else's, because literally I'm the only person in Pocket Gamer who likes this game. Everyone else hates it. I mean, genuinely, really thinks it's an awful, awful game. So me and Keith had lots of debates about it. And I can kind of see why, because I think a lot of people are coming at it, obviously, from a console-based background where you play first-person shooters with a pad or a keyboard and mouse. And the attempt, I think, to revolutionize that control method has just not kind of clearly worked for that kind of audience. But equally, I have to say, it kind of against my own kind of love of the game, it's commercially, it's not doing very well at the moment either. So we kind of, you could argue, and probably should argue, that it's not found an audience of people who haven't been kind of hardcore gamers or played console games before, because they are quite happy playing, you know, Clash of Clans and Heyday type things. So they have no need for this kind of experience. I think that partly because it was PR'd so heavily, that gave lots of people an opportunity to give it a good kicking. I think if it'd come out and they'd not done any PR and just said, oh, it's like this kind of new game that's come out from this studio you've never heard of before, people would have got enthusiastic about it. I think because it came out from this massive Japanese company and it was PR'd months ahead of time, it gave people more time to think about it. So that's, just to go back, the reason I really like it is, one, I'm terrible at games, as we all know, but I'm actually quite good at this one. So I won't go into the control method, but it's basically every level you play is just a 2-minute timed level where various zombies come running towards you. And they're kind of pretty thick zombies. Literally, they just come running towards you and they try and hit you. And you have to move out of the way and shoot them. And the kind of the whole update cycle of the game is as you update weapons and unlock new kind of areas to get more weapons. It's very weapon-based. The zombies literally just have AI, but their AI is they just want to attack you. So they look kind of unintelligent. They don't go hiding around and jumping out at you. They just literally come bombing straight towards you. But actually, what I really like about it is it does take a bit of time. And I have played it pretty heavily. I probably played it like an hour a day this week. But you get to a certain stage where, and the only other game, which I'm sure Peter will laugh at in particular, that I felt like this was GoldenEye, where you get to, because I just played one level of GoldenEye over and over and over again. I never played the level to finish it. I played the level to just wander around and like find out where people were spawning. I used to play it for hours, literally this single level, and just never finish it. And okay. And obviously it's a different thing with The Drowning, because it's a 2-minute kind of fixed time. You can't play any longer. But I really feel like, and it's probably because of the control method, which I won't really explain, it'll take too long, but I really feel like I'm totally in control of the level. And I'm basically moving around, and I'm kind of like moving the zombies where I want them to be. I'm kind of getting the high scores by getting kind of headshots on them, then spinning around immediately, finding the next one. And it becomes a speed thing where you're trying to be as efficient as possible in shooting them. So because then they respawn, and you kind of know, you get to know where they respawn. So you're kind of like almost you're shooting them, then you're running to where they're going to respawn to shoot them again. And because it has this kind of like frenzy method. So and the other really interesting thing, and I think in time it will find an audience, because like an Angry Birds, instead of ranking out 3, it actually ranks out 5. But and so you, it shows you kind of like how successful you've been on a level, so how many stars you've got. And at the start, you don't really have a good enough gun to kill things quick enough to get more than kind of 3 stars out of 5. Let's say quite quickly, I have spent money, but not this didn't affect the upgrade of the gun kind of thing. But when you get to 5, when you get up to 5 stars, so you get to a certain score in the game, you can then see your world ranking. So you can see the rank against every other player who's got to that level. And I'm not good at games, but on some of these ones, I'm actually ranked like 6,000th in the world, which I mean, I've no idea how many. But you just kind of feel like you're really in control. It's a really, really nice feeling. It's like you've and I think a lot of games can become this. You kind of abstract out the game, so what the game's asking you to do just becomes like second nature to you. So I just immediately know what I'm doing, and it's just can I get that one extra shot in I need to get my high score a bit higher. And I find that quite fascinating.
How do you find the disconnect between the tone the game is trying to get across in terms of its story and the arcade based high score mechanic?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a disconnect there, but I think I've not really got a good answer to that. And I have to say, when you start playing more difficult levels and you've got kind of more entry-level guns, then that experience is not quite as enjoyable, because you haven't got the powerful guns that can kind of kill those things quite quickly And then so you kind of feel like you're kind of not in control. So I'm playing pretty much the first four levels over and over and over again, or particularly one of those, what's the easiest levels? There's only three zombies in it and they just respawn all the time. But I'm just literally playing it for 10 times in a row.
So you're almost playing it like a Dan Marcus shooting game, like a bullet hell shmup almost.
Yeah,
like...
no, exactly. It's pretty much kind of a pattern recognition thing and kind of sometimes, it's because of the control system. You couldn't play it the way I'm playing it with the twin sticks. It's like a tank. So you're moving in one direction, but you're aiming another one. And the one thing I do think is a really weird decision that they've made is the default option is not to be able to move and shoot at the same time. And I think they've done that because they think they're going to get a lot of people who aren't hardcore gamers in. But you can't play the game properly unless you can move and shoot.
You can do it with virtual sticks.
Oh no, yeah, but anyone who plays with virtual sticks is really not understanding. I mean, I know. It was kind of funny because I've spoken to the designer about it, and he was, you know, he's obviously very passionate about the game and the system he came up with. But as soon as they started testing it, basically Apple told them put in a default twin stick solution on it, which is what they did. Mm. I mean, obviously, me being a journalist and having no reputation or no money in this game at all, I would have kind of told them to get lost and kind of say make this thing as pure as possible, because I just kind of think the only thing I can see is their problems is these kind of two decisions where they've given people a chance to play it their own way, but the game is designed because the people who've made it are really, really experienced game designers and makers, and they've worked on Battlefield and all these kind of things, so they really have made a very focused experience. And I kind of think the problem is they've made something that's very focused, and the audience that they're going for is at the moment it's slightly too broad for it. But then of course it could be completely wrong, because all you guys who I would consider hardcore gamers, more hardcore gamers than me, really hate it. So there's a really weird disconnect going on there.
So here's the thing, I don't hate it. I gave it a 4.
You gave it 4 out of 10.
Yeah,
that's pretty brutal.
I must admit, like, I do feel like I was not washed, like, you know, not swept up in it, but I do feel like I experienced some of that hype and some of that PR spin. But for me, I just kind of felt like it had gone back to almost like the Doom days of like it was it's a very, very straightforward shooter. And for the people who made Battlefield, for people who are like really pushing forward, you know, first person shooters, it feels a little bit, I guess, hollow. Like it doesn't feel like there's a lot there.
I was going to say, actually, when you started to say that it almost crossed my mind when I was playing it, that, like you say, all the hype and the name and the way it's pitched, and you've got this idea that there's a story and a mystery to solve. It feels like the kind of pitch you would get from a big blockbuster modern day console shooter. Yet then when you start playing it, it's kind of, as John described it in his enthusiastic way, I wouldn't be quite as enthusiastic, this kind of almost little tinny thing where you know, which I suppose is better. Supposedly you say it's better for mobile that they do break it up in that way. But it almost feels as if they came up with this control scheme that they thought would be able to work for this huge mammoth game that they wanted to do, and it didn't, and it kind of works for what they've
I think you're absolutely true for, I think you're absolutely correct for that. I think maybe that's where people have got where you're right, where you see this big cinematic thing. I think the other big problem is whenever people start playing it, and certainly when I first started playing it, you basically end up kind of walking up to them, they come running up to you, you just stand there shooting them in the head, it's about three of them, and then they go away, and then you have to, and if you get stuck you have to like turn your back to them and like run away. Because I think in most console games, when you, what you kind of do is you move backwards with the enemy in front of you shooting them, don't you? I mean, that's kind of how I tend to play console shooters. Yeah. In this game you can't do that because you can't move backward. I mean, you can, but it's a you're not moving backwards directly, you're having to look backwards, say go backwards, then look forwards again. I mean, that way of playing is different, and that's quite a big, I think, a big obstacle for people to overcome. I've been playing shooters in this way for 10 years or ever, because that's how you play shooters, and now I'm going to play them in a almost like a 180 degree different way.
Well, I found it very repetitive, and I guess if you're enjoying it, like you are, obviously you're hooked into that cycle and you find it rewarding, that's great. I didn't find it rewarding. I found it very repetitive, and the level design not very exciting. The zombies bland and dumb, and I didn't enjoy the actual.
I mean, that's the point. The point of the zombies are they're dumb. Actually, I think the level design is actually a little bit too. I think it should be a little simpler actually at the start. I think it's a little bit too finicky. Yeah.
And the other thing is the stuff that glues it together. So the little cutscene bits, or even just the stuff when you're upgrading a gun and they're doing the animations, kind of rubbish. Like, it looks, it's pretty, it's pretty low rent. Like, in between, you see the screenshots and you see the characters, and in motion, like, it looks all right, I suppose. But when they're doing the little story bits, and when you go into the gun shop and you, like, put a gun on the table, and then take the gun off the table again, all that, that stuff looks kind of bad.
It's interesting. I thought that at the beginning, but that's because they basically have the same animation for every single weapon type. So if they had a different animation for every weapon type, the
it would
the
look
size
good.
Would get enormous.
Yeah, I understand that it's done for a logistical reason, but doesn't stop it looking any less kind of crappy.
It doesn't. I don't think it looks awful. It kind of maybe only looks awful in the context of which you're expecting Battlefield 4.
But do you not think the whole thing though, little elements, I was kind of trying to point out the way the Mobbage Mugabe whatever thing interrupts.
Mobbage. Well,
Mobbage.
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 Mugabe.
It's almost like an experiment they should have kept in house, and then they should have learned something from it and gone on to make something better. It feels like several different products and visions coming together, and a lot of them don't work.
It could be exactly right that they came up with a really good control scheme, and they've put it in the worst game possible that they put it in the worst context possible they could have done, because they've conflagrated two exact opposite things, and I think that's kind of where it has gone wrong. And if they'd come up with, this is quite a, yeah, this is quite a fast arcade game, a bit cutey, doesn't got a big cinematic thing to it, then people just gone, oh, so I've kind of found out the way to play it by ignoring all the cinematic stuff, and you guys have been so focused on the cinematic stuff that you can't play the game. So
I think if you're an average punter and you come across that and you download it, I think within that first few minutes, you're not really sure what it is.
Well, it's nice to hear a positive report from someone, considering all the negativity that's flown around. So someone likes it. Drowning is not completely without its fans, or its fan in this case. So well done, John. For standing up on the side there, that's grand. Right. Okay, right, I'm going to hop on to the throne very briefly, because I'm going to talk to you about Plants vs. Zombies 2, which is probably the biggest release of this week. I've been playing it this afternoon. It is most definitely Plants vs. Zombies.
Good.
Yes, you'll be pleased to hear. Well, no, I mean, considering like the way it's been done, as in I looked into it a little bit back, but PopCap or EA, when they got taken over and everything, they fired the guy who created it. So the guy who was responsible for Plants vs. Zombies didn't make this game. So, there could be every reason to worry that EA has gone and shoveled a bunch of people into PopCap and said, go on, make it freemium and milk them for every penny they've got. And it's going to be a completely horrible experience. It's not a completely horrible experience. I've been playing it for about sort of an hour and a half, maybe two, or something like that, on and off. I've just come to the end of the Egyptian world. There are like 11 kind of levels in it, but there's also all these sub-levels that go off from the side. You go along a little progression route through the story. Not that there is much of a story, but it's time travel thing, so it's set in different time periods. So you've got, it starts off in ancient Egypt, and then I think you bugger off into I think there's a Wild Westy bit, and then there's some pirate stuff as well, something like that.
Yep.
But mechanically, it's very much the game that you know. There are a few differences. So in addition to building your towers and choosing the different plants, which allow you to do different things, so stuff that fires seed pellets at people, there's one that fires like these boomerangs that fly past an enemy and then return again and hit them on the way back. You've got these things that launch massive cabbages, so they shoot over the top of obstacles and can land on the heads of enemies which would otherwise be out of your line of sight. So that's all, a couple of new adjustments there. There's a few different game modes as well. So there's a way that obviously the standard Plants vs. Zombies where you grab sunflowers, you make the little sun beams appear, the little sun pellets, whatever you call them, and you collect them and you use that as currency to build your troops. There's also one now where you have a conveyor belt that rolls up the side of the screen and it's got the different enemies on them, so you kind of have to grab whatever's there and then just bung them onto the grid and do it as it's going on. So there's kind of a timed thing going on there. They've also added some gesture based attacks. So now you've got these three attacks at the bottom where you've got a pinch attack where you can literally reach in and pinch the heads off of zombies as they're coming in with your fingers. So and grab them all off. There's also a lightning one too, so you can try to trace your finger through a line of zombies and they'll all get electrocuted. And there's also one which involves picking them up and then throwing them away. So you activate it and then you flick them and they kind of jump up into the air. And then you just flick them again in whatever direction and they fling off the side of the screen. All of which is kind of cool. So that's added kind of a new layer on top of it.
How did you find that, James? Because those are like consumable items, aren't they? So that's more of the free-to-play type.
Exactly, that's the thing. As is the way with a lot of free-to-play games, they show you a couple of neat new features, let you play with them for a bit, and then you run out of currency and you have to get more. And this is what I've, you know, that's the common thing they do with free-to-play. Like, show you something cool that you then learn to like and then take it away from you, so that you then have to either pay or grind the hell out of the early levels to get it back. I'm not paying anything at the moment. They are too expensive for what they are. So I've used them. I've used them as I've been using other things and realized that I've just like, oh, I've just spent half my entire cash fund there on that one thing that lasted for about 3.5 seconds. And so clearly they are quite highly priced for what they are. So in the heat of battle, you might grab one and go, damn, I've just spent, you know, half my currency. Oops. I either have to buy more or keep grinding. So I don't really like that side of it, to be honest. It's the same. I feel the same with this as I do with most of the freemium stuff I play, which is I would happily give them £2, you know, give them £1.99 or whatever for them.
Are we going to have to go through the mechanics of free to play again?
No.
They don't want your £2.
I know they don't want
games. They want £100.
I'm well aware of that, but I'm not going to give it to them. So screw them. It's the same, and that's the problem for a lot of people, which is like, you know, I like the fact that I could go in and use these things and either earn them just by playing, which you can do, but you obviously have to play a lot more. There's also the thing that you come up against with these games, which makes you sort of second guess yourself, which is this level hard because I'm rubbish and I'm not playing it right? Or is it being deliberately hard so that I have to use these power-ups and then I run out and then I have to buy more? And there's that horrible second guessing where you're like, is this me or is this the game? Is it cynically trying to wring money from me, or am I just not getting it and I'm not doing it right? It's a feeling I don't really enjoy in these things. So it's got that layer of freemiumness on it, which I know people don't like, and I have a few issues with too, which does color it slightly. However, the rest of it, it looks fantastic. The different environments are cool. It's the game that you love is very much in there. And the little bits that have been added on top, the conveyor belt idea on the side, that's really neat. The actual attacks themselves, gesture-based ones, are kind of fun. There's also a little sort of power-up where you can drag it onto one of your attackers, one of your forces, sorry, one of your plants. And it'll just, for a very brief amount of time, it'll put them like to this very high-powered auto-fire thing where they just shoot out a whole bunch of pellets. That's quite cool. And you gain that by shooting enemies which are glowing. So there's no currency involved in that. It's just you make sure you shoot the right enemy, you'll get the little power-up, and then you can use it. That's really nice. That's really neat because it feels, you know, contained within the game. When it starts coming to, you know, managing currency, that's the less fun aspect of it to me and feels a bit bleh. Anyone who enjoyed the first one, definitely download it. Whether you spend any money or not, I don't know. I think it feels like you're going to have to play levels a few more times than you would in the original game. Because I blasted through the original game in like one sitting on a plane. And it wasn't especially tough, I didn't think. But it was really enjoyable and, you know, fun to do. This, I think, especially as you push towards the end of the later levels, you might have to restart a couple of times or grind more to get some of the power-ups if you want to actually use them. Or, of course, drop that sweet, sweet currency. And they've got the £69.99, you know, purchase if you want to make it, which always makes me weep. So it's got the freemium baggage with it. If you really, really set against freemium, then maybe you'll have an issue. I think it is totally playable without it. I wouldn't say the freemium's added anything good to it.
I'll put up a hand for the PocketGamer.biz monetizer column.
Go on, then.
Next week, in which we will be looking at the first 10 minute, we'll video the first 10 minutes of Plants vs Zombies 2, and I'll be giving my opinion on its monetization.
Ooh, so lovely.
That'll be on Wednesday. It'll be on the PocketGamer.biz YouTube channel as well.
Splendid. Yeah, do that. Actually, yes, get the business angle as well, and download it in the meantime because, you know, it's, whilst you might have some issues with the premium stuff, it's Plants vs Zombies. It really is, and it's fun. It's still fun. So go for it. Okay, who is going to take over the throne from me? Let's say Peter!
Jump on. Yeah. So I've been playing an augmented reality game on Vita.
What?
I know, right? So it's a game called Open Me. And I knew Keith would laugh at the title. It's got an exclamation mark at the end as well. So it's more like, Open Me!
Bring back memories.
Yeah, well, we were in Manchester the other day, weren't we? Imagine The Room. Not The Room where we did that thing, but The Room, the game on iPad and Android. It's that, but using AR markers and a Vita, And so you put a little marker down on a table, like a small coffee table or something like that. You can also run the game without them, but it's a little bit more difficult. With the game kind of picks up little different spots on the table and tries to kind of fudge doing AR properly. The game scans it and it goes, oh, yeah, there it is. And on the screen, you'll see the room around you, obviously, because you're pointing the camera at this little card. And then a box appears. And the idea is to open the box. So all you have to do is, for the first one, you just swipe on the lid and the lid opens and hooray, you've opened the box. Very easy. And if it was just that, 2 out of 10. But the next one adds a lock. And then the next one after that adds a different type of lock. And it's about figuring out how to unlock all of these boxes. So unlike the room, there are multiple ones of these boxes, and it's got this freemium element. You can download the trial for free, and you get, I think it's called Pack 00 and Pack 13 for free. And they're kind of like, it's like a tutorial pack, and then Pack 13 actually advertises other Vita games. So it's like little boxes based on Tokyo Jungle and Gravity Rush. And there is something so magical about AR still. Like, it still feels really cool when you see it done right. And, you know, especially when that AR starts manipulating the surface that it's sat on, for example. Like in this one, it'll actually draw a box on the table that you've got it sat on, and then it'll fold up, made out of the texture of the table that you're pointing the camera at. It's really clever. But the really cool thing about it is it makes you feel like Indiana Jones out of that movie.
Really?
Absolutely.
That movie, Indiana Jones.
that movie, Indiana Jones. You know the bit where he's got that heavy object and he's got a pick up one object from like a pressure thing
with the bag of sand
and he has to replace it, right? And you know, that whole Indiana Jones, maybe even James Bond thing of figuring out something, like trying to get into something,
point and click.
It's actually is a little bit like the point and click. So basically, like, it evokes that feeling. And the fact that it's in the physical space, one of the buttons to unlock the box might be on the back of the box, right? So you've got to move around the entire table physically just to get at it. And it's like it suddenly becomes this sort of slightly twister physical, almost party game, but played single player. You're sort of desperately sort of holding one finger on the button on one side of a box, and then keeping your finger on the screen, then moving the camera around, like, and sort of shifting your entire body so that you're leaning over the top of this box, and you can tap the bottom like this, the other side of it. It's just absolutely brilliant. Like, I really loved it. Like, and tying in with this magic, there is this thing of, like, what's inside a locked box, right? There's this mystery, and there's this base human emotion of wanting to find out something that's secret. Oh, we're not telling you what's inside this thing, so you can't know what it is. And when you've got this camera pointed at this thing, you're just like, no, I've got to get inside this. I've got to see what's inside. And the best of all, you can buy the entire set for, like, £6.50 or something like that, or you can download little packs for free. So it's a freemium game in which you can buy like little packs for 65p, and it contains like 3 puzzles. But the best thing about it is that sometimes inside of those boxes are trophies, PlayStation trophies. And the feeling of unlocking a PlayStation trophy from inside a locked box is so gratifying. Like, just hearing that ching, it's that you know, it taps into that pop cap reward thing of, oh my goodness me, I've figured out this thing. I've totally outsmarted the developer. Ha ha, I'm amazing. And I've been rewarded for it, and I can brag about it to my mates. And not only that, I know I'm enthusing about this, but it is fantastic. You can unlock points, right? So you get experience points for doing all this sort of stuff. And then you can create your own puzzles to send to your friends who have Vita consoles and a copy of the game. And you can send it across to them, and then you could try and outsmart your friends. Peter,
can I just stop you there? So you have friends with a Vita and a copy of the game. This is an incredibly declining Venn diagram intersection.
This is
you? Can you send them to yourself?
I do have two Vitas.
That's what you do. You send it from the lounge to the living room.
I send it from the lounge to the living room.
Ooh,
like,
I wonder what this is.
I wonder what that is. And then I cry myself to sleep.
Well, that's the thing. The best thing about augmented reality games for me is not the playing of them, but the watching other people play them. Because it looks like you're having a psychological event.
You would love this then, because you really do have to scramble across the AR card. Like you can't play it in bed. You can't, you know, do any of that stuff. You really do need a small like coffee table or something like that so that you can actually wander around it and see all of this different stuff.
Well, yeah, I'd like to see a photo of you wandering around your table looking at nothing.
I might do a video.
That would be okay. Vine yourself wandering around looking like you're photographing fairies that no one else can see.
Yeah, all right.
Splendid. All right, then you do that. Well, that's grand. Thank you for that. Which leaves us with Keith, who has been playing a game, and I think I know what you're going to say about this game, judging by your Twitter activity.
To be fair, I've only been playing it briefly. I said that every week. I've only been playing it briefly. I've been playing Kid Trip.
With two P's on the end.
Two P's. It's a sigh of disapproval from Pete there. So it's a kind of does the running for you, old school kind of fast paced platformer.
Yeah.
In kind of 8-bit styling, with some incredibly annoying music actually, they tried to kind of recreate the sound that you you would have got right down to the kind of harshness of the sounds you'd have got. This is like too harsh. It sounds like it's blaring out of my iPods, kind of nastily actually. But I mean, the styling itself, you know, it's that pixel look, which we've kind of said before, kind of everyone's done now. So that kind of puts me off anyway. And B, like the opening levels, just like a ripoff of Sonic the Hedgehog.
It's got Sonic the Hedgehog and Alex Kidd and something else. Yeah. It is Green Hill Zone or whatever it is. Yeah,
it's just complete Green Hill Zone. So I know it's one of those. It's one of those games that I would have hated when I was younger as well, because it essentially relies on you being able to time jumps perfectly, like perfectly. And if you don't, before you know it, you're dead because you've fallen off, or you've run into an enemy, or you've run into a wall with spikes on or something. And you know, so then it just jumps you straight back. And it's essentially one of those games of. Well, I don't know how you played it, James. I don't know.
I reviewed it, yeah.
You're amazing and I'm awful, but there's absolutely no chance in hell that I'm going to get through any level first time. And so it's one of those games where you have to go back and learn on the fly exactly when you're meant to jump. And, you know, there's kind of only one, maybe one and a half answers for, you know, you essentially have to do it how it's been designed or you're dead, which just isn't fun for me. It's just, why would I want to, you know, this guy's designed this world and so I'm expected to go in there and do exactly what he wants, otherwise I'm dead. And
this is something that we're kind of seeing. I mean, this is obviously a paid game, not a free-to-play game, but you know, when you grind free-to-play games out, you're not doing it for the enjoyment of actually what you're doing in the game. You're doing it for the enjoyment of in this case completing a level, or in another case getting some resource. I mean,
but the difference is when you're grinding free-to-play games, it's often a level that's easy that you're just playing again and again because you need the cash from it because it's easy. This is not that, you're playing it to complete it.
Okay, but I'm just saying, kind of, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, it's for some experiences we like to do that because it's a game we like, and in some experiences I'd be like Keith probably for this one, but that repetition is something that's kind of fundamental to games, really, isn't it?
It highlights to me why endless runners work and why this doesn't, because an endless runner, if you die an endless runner, even if you die early on, it's almost funny because you can kind of say, oh, what a bad luck that came, you know, because most of them are random, and you go, oh, what a bad luck that block appeared there, you know, if I do it again it won't be there, and you know, I'll probably get further. You kind of kid yourself into thinking it wasn't really your fault, and that you know you can do better than that, and hopefully next time when it starts it will give you a very, you know, you'll get a nice kind of open bit where you can just run. With this, even if I were successful, all it proves is that I'm able to read very quickly what the developer want me to do. It doesn't actually mean I'm any good at anything. It doesn't mean I'm particularly skilled or you know, I'm not learning anything. All it means is that I've recognised that there's a big hole there with a balloon in the middle, and he wants me to jump onto that balloon.
Oh, yeah, but isn't that the appeal of all Bomani games ever?
I don't even know what you just said.
Rhythm action games.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I wouldn't play those anyway. I mean, but they appeal, you know, at least there's a kind of...
There's definitely skill involved, Keith. I mean, the reason I hate it is because it's so hard. Like, that's why I hate it. I'm crap at it. But I think there's definitely skill involved.
It's not skill.
The skill is reading, like you said, the skill is reading what's coming up next, or even in some levels.
That's not really a skill, though. If it was something worth reading, if it was something where, you know, if you were learning a language, then you're learning to read, you know, that's a skill. But all you're doing here is essentially putting your mind in the same place that the guy, whoever he is, although he just tweet me, actually.
whoever he is,
when he made it. I mean, that's essentially saying that he's skilled, because I don't think actually the level... I mean, it is incredibly hard, but I just think it's almost unnecessarily so in places. It's kind of like a...
It is well brutal.
Leaping through 700 hoops, but what does it prove? It just means...
No, the skill, as with any of these things, is it's timing. It's timing and reaction testing. It's not... Yeah, it's not. You're not pathfinding, per se. You are...
It's completely boiled down. I mean, any platform is a kind of timing and jumping and knowing when to do it, but there's a certain amount of exploration and creativity there, whereas this is literally just bam, 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 jump, 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 and shoot the whole time when you're doing it.
You can't shoot the whole time, though. Like, say, later levels, if you destroy enemies, you actually need them in order to get over gaps and stuff. And in a couple of places, it branches off in two directions. You can go to an upper or lower level.
It's not bad, but the styling, I think, is old now. And I don't mean that literally, as in, because it's obviously meant to be old. But, I mean, that's been done to death now.
I agree with you there.
Almost a norm. And it's kind of harshly that way as well. And actually, all the levels that I've seen so far all kind of play on levels that you know already. You know, the design of them. They look like certain things that you've seen before. So it kind of hasn't really... There are ways you can do that, which make the game still look interesting, even if it's taken this kind of 8-bit approach. But there's nothing really original there, is it? It's just a case of him throwing a load of holes in the ground.
The person that this was built for is Harry Slater, basically, you're saying.
People it's built for is... People obviously like the old retro things, but also if you like League of Evil, those games, much in the same camp of, like... fiendishly tough, remorselessly cruel, and you have to get it bang on and memorize like 25 different moves in the right order at the right time, or you're back to the beginning and just, you know, deal with it.
But there's more, there's humor in that. There's more, it's a bigger game than this.
It has got more scope.
It's almost like some kind of test, you know.
Yeah, I thought it was too short because it's only like 20 levels or 25.
Review it.
Yeah, I reviewed it. There's only like 25 levels, and I had to play through because I'm again doing video reviews. You have to show it, so you can't get away with playing the first level and going, it's not good. Yeah, and it was a tough afternoon of getting through that all the way through to the end. But I did enjoy doing it. It had the same feeling with League of Evil, where it's tough and it's a bitch, but I keep coming back to it. And then when you do complete it, there is this kind of just real proper like. Same thing people say about Dark Souls and the way that it's so remorselessly difficult and you're going back and you keep getting knocked back right to the beginning, checkpoints that are miles away and you have to go back all the way through. But you have to treat it so that it's when you die, it's not a punishment. It's like a lesson you're being taught and that it's not a bad thing. And then when you do finally complete it, there's a real like, yes, skills, because executing those 25 moves at the right time with the right pressure and everything takes skill. You learn it, because if you give it to a random person and say play through first time, they won't be able to do it. So there's got to be something to it.
Well, in that you, like I say, you understand where you're meant to jump and you can do it. I mean,
aside from the fact that you're not exploring levels per se, you are just going in a straight line, but every platformer is like working out when the right time to jump is and gauging distance and timing.
But they are, but they're bigger levels. They're not thrown at you in this way. And there's just more creativity in them. This is just a kind of stripping it right down to its bare soul without any character or creativity when it comes to designing the thing. And you just think, well, why does this matter? Why do I care about this? I don't know. There would have been people when I was at school who have an equivalent game would have loved it, and I'd have gone round and played it and said, that's rubbish. can we play something better, please?
Dying should be a thing that you learn to live with in a positive way, not a negative way, I think. And that goes for life in general.
I was going to say, put that on your gravestone.
And on that philosophical note, I think we'll bring this podcast to an end. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Nice full house this week. like I said before, I myself and Keith are going to be away in Gamescom and GDC next week, looking at new games, stuff that hasn't been released yet, and we'll come back with lots of exciting news and bits and bobs. Don't know what we're going to do about the podcast exactly. Might try and do something over there, or maybe try and do some transatlantic, well, not transatlantic, I suppose, trans-channel link up. I don't know, something like that.
That's going to complicate issues if we've got to then fly to the US.
Yeah, you guys go to America, we'll go to Germany, and we'll meet somewhere in the middle. Excellent. Thanks for listening, everybody. Join us again next week, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.